Thank you, Ms. Pam, as well, for reminding me. Thank you to the persistence of our acolytes this morning. Sometimes, I don't know what, I'm having one of those days too, Trace. I really am. So good for you. Yes, good for you. That's not something we do to acolytes usually. And next time you can have the other side. Right? Well, the title of this sermon, good news. Have you ever had one of those experiences, those of you who are sports fans, watching a basketball game or a football game? I hear that there's a football game. When is that coming up? A big one. But when it's getting on late and your team is up, you know, like two or three scores if it's a football game or by 15 or 20 points, and it's getting on to be late and you're getting sleepy and you go to sleep thinking they've got it locked up, right? And you go to sleep and then you turn on and you check on ESPN or whatever, you check the score the next morning and you go, what happened? You know, because the other team rallies and comes from behind. You ever had one of those moments, or is it just me that's had one of those moments? Thank you. Well, the good news was that you got to celebrate being ahead for at least three quarters or whatever, right? Bad news was they didn't get the win. The good news, back when I was a kid, teenager, I used to run cross country. And we had a state champion in our league, and he went on to be one of the best professional runners in the country. The good news was I got to run against him, and we were tied for all of one step. And then... while we're laughing a little bit, any golfers out there? This has really not much to do, except good news, bad news. Some of you like to golf. I heard about a golfer that was wondering and asked his pastor if there were golf courses in heaven. And the pastor said, well, I don't like to commit to anything. I don't know. And so he said, let me get back to you. So he went off. He asked God about it. The next week in church, he came back to the golfer and said, well, I got good news and bad news. The good news is that God told me in prayer that there were thousands of courses in heaven that would make Augusta National pale in comparison, and tee times are never a problem. But he said, the bad news is you're teeing off tomorrow at 9 a.m. Well, if ever there was a story, I know it wasn't that good of a joke, guys. I know. If ever there was a time in the Bible with that had kind of good news and bad news, or especially fit that sports analogy where you go to sleep thinking, this is awesome, and then the very next moment when you wake up, you find out that your team lost. This is the story. What we didn't read this morning, it was in last week's lectionary. This is the passage where Jesus goes to the synagogue for the first time as an adult. We read it in Luke's gospel. And it's his turn to read, just like Donna did. And he opens up. Back then, they didn't have Bibles to open like this. They had scrolls. And so he finds his place in the scroll. He rolls it up, unrolls it, and finds the place in the prophet Isaiah where it says this. And Jesus would have spoken this. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor, or the year of Jubilee. And then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and dropped the mic. Because he said, today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing. No, he didn't really drop the mic. That was an attempt to reach out to some of the youngsters in our crowd and make it relevant. But it was basically that. He said, today, this has been fulfilled in your hearing. Well, this is one of those times, if you were to fade out, stop after last week, you'd go to sleep thinking, this is awesome. My Jesus is great. And you'd remember the time when he fed the 5,000 and gave to the hungry. And you'd remember the time when he healed that man. He got in a boat with the disciples, went across to the other side of the sea, healed the man that was sort of in a cemetery that they said was possessed by demons. And he made him well and he cast out the demons and reintroduced him back into community. You would say, that is my Jesus. And you go to sleep thinking, wow, we got a win today. But then, the very next verse, when you wake up, you find out, because the tide changes. If you're listening closely to what Donna said, she said, as Jesus, the crowd like turned on him and got mad. They got so mad that they ran him out of the synagogue up to the top of a hill, and they were going to throw him off. I mean, they were fighting words. They were mad at Jesus. That's not how the story was supposed to go. I'm not so sure if that's the Jesus that I would feel comfortable following, the one that gets the ire up of the congregation that want to kill him. Well, we don't have to go very far in our community to find the people that Jesus is talking about and to. The poor, remember he said, I came to bring good news to the poor. Overall, the poverty rate in our small town of Roxborough, I looked it up, 36% of the people in Roxborough live below the poverty line. One in three, right? 36%. Jesus said, I have come to proclaim release to the captives. Well, we can see a jail as we drive up and down the boulevard with people that are in captivity. I've come to give recovery of sight to the blind. Well, any of you in here have trouble driving at night? Don't like to go out, right? I don't know. In this church, as far as I know, we don't have anyone that's fully blind, but I have had those in other congregations. This is a very uncomfortable passage to preach to somebody, remembering that Jesus healed the blind and that that power doesn't seem to be to rest on folks that much anymore. To proclaim, to let the oppressed go free. Basics, that group, that community group, started right here out of this church, talks about issues of racism that have been a part of this community and all American communities and communities all around the place since communities were communities. And the year of Jubilee, you might not have heard about that before, but this was a concept in the Old Testament where God said every 50 years, every seventh seven, after the 49th year, every 50 years, those that have gotten in debt and can't get out, wipe those debts away. Just wipe them away so that everyone can get back on a level playing field. Redistribute stuff. Now, Israel never pulled it off, and as far as I know, no one else has either. But Jesus said, I'm here to proclaim it. And you think, now that's my kind of Jesus. I'm not trying to push any kind of political agenda. I'm just telling you what Jesus said in that synagogue that day, that he was preaching good news to the poor, recovery of sight to the blind, freedom for the oppressed, release to the captives, and the year of Jubilee. I want to talk about the poverty thing and good news to the poor. Often, you know, we have the woodshed out back. Have you ever seen that? The Tom Holtzclaw Memorial Woodshed back there. It's empty right now. It was full on Wednesday, but there's so many people in need in this community that need to get wood to heat their homes. Any of you have heat in your homes? Yeah. There's a lot of folks in our community that don't and that rely on that generosity. And oftentimes, we think that that is good news to the poor, and it is. It is. If you don't have heat, some kind souls that chop up wood and give it to you to heat your house, that is good news. But I want to share with you a paragraph from the book that I was reading, When Helping Hurts, How to Alleviate Poverty Without Hurting the Poor and Yourself, by Brian Fickert, Steve Corbett, and John Perkins. Low-income people, they say, daily face a struggle to survive that creates feelings of helplessness, anxiety, suffocation, and desperation that are simply unparalleled in the lives of the rest of humanity. Development expert Robert Chambers argues that the materially poor are trapped by multiple interconnected factors: insufficient assets, vulnerability, powerlessness, isolation, physical weakness, that ensnare them like bugs caught in a spider's web. Imagine, they say, being caught in such a web. Every time you try to move, you just get more hung up on another strand. You think to yourself, maybe this time will be different. So you try to make a change in your life, but immediately you find yourself even more entangled than before. After a while, you come to believe that it's better just to lie still, which is miserable. But any further movement only brings even greater misery. You hate your situation, but you have no choice. Most of the readers of this book don't lead this type of life. We believe that we have choices and that we can make changes. And in our situations, it's a correct assumption. But according to Nobel laureate Amartya Sen, it's this lack of freedom to be able to make meaningful choices, to have an ability to affect one's situation. That is the distinguishing feature of poverty. End of quote. In my first church, I dealt with a lot of folks. It was a small town, smaller than Roxborough, a little mill village, and we'd get to know some of the folks that were really struggling. And they wouldn't have a job, and they wouldn't have transportation, but eventually they'd get a little bit of a job, and they'd buy themselves a little car that wouldn't run very good. And they'd go out trying to get themselves back and forth to work, but they weren't able to get a license, or maybe they weren't able to get insurance. And so they'd get pulled over because of a broken headlight or something. And then the officer would say, well, you don't have insurance. That's illegal. And then they'd go to jail. That's kind of that one example of that kind of web, right? You try and do something, you try and get a job, but then there's this other piece of the web and you get all tangled up in it. And then it just becomes inescapable. Well, in today's passage, we pick up right after Jesus dropped the mic. All speak well of him. That was a great sermon, empowering, uplifting. And they were amazed by his gracious words. Then they say, wait a minute, I know this guy. This is Joseph's son. Joseph's a carpenter. I don't know if this ought to be coming out of Jesus' mouth. You know, it just doesn't fit with his station in life. And then Jesus said, he says that when he does what he's about to do, the people aren't going to be so happy with him. See, he's going to go on to do things in other places. He's going to go up to, not in Roxborough, but up to Virgilina and do a miracle there. He maybe is going to preach at a big church in Raleigh and a lot of people are going to turn out. He's going to go down to Sanford and he'll have a healing service and someone who has leukemia is going to be healed. And the people are going to say, do it here, do it here, do it here. And he'll come again, and he'll be willing, but the hometown folks won't be so receptive. What do you mean, won't be so receptive, they ask, now guarded, now sort of going after Jesus a little bit? He goes further. He said, I just read the book of Isaiah in our scriptures. Miraculous healing. There's a place in the Bible, he said, with two other hometown boys. Elijah was a miracle worker. There's a famine in the land. It hadn't rained in years. People were starving. The food stores had dried up, and there was a certain widow. She was literally starving. She and her child were at the point of death, and Elijah was sent to her, this widow, but she wasn't from around here. She was one of the not Israelites in a town outside of Israel. And Jesus says, right to those folks in his own hometown, and God's miracle didn't come to the folks around here, but it came to that foreigner, that woman, that widow from Zarephath, not to the Israelites. And then to drive his point home, he calls up the story of Naaman, who is a general in the Syrian army that has leprosy. And Elisha, the prophet of God and the miracle worker and Elijah's successor, heals him, this foreign general. While there were many in the Israelite community that had leprosy as well, but Jesus makes a point to say that it was only someone outside that Jesus healed. And then the crowd gets irate. We're not exactly sure why. Is it because they're jealous? Is it because they are insulted? I don't know, but they are irate, and they are so mad that they run him out of the synagogue, they run him up the highest hill in town, and they're going to push him over and kill him right there. And yet Jesus says, it's not my time, and he walks right through their midst because his time was still coming. Even though God said to Abraham, you see, way back in the Old Testament, you will be my chosen people, Genesis chapter 12, and I will be your God, and through you, it says in Genesis 12, all the nations of earth will be blessed, like many folks, like us folks. These folks had trouble with the notion that God would be blessing other folks sometimes. Do we have any newlyweds in our midst? Do we have any newlyweds? Anybody that can remember their wedding, even? Let's go with that. Yeah, there we go. A few of you. I'm not going to ask you to remember the date, because that's a whole different thing. But there's a prayer in the Methodist wedding service that says this: God the Eternal, keep you in love with each other so that the peace of Christ may abide in your home. Go to serve God and your neighbor in all that you do. Bear witness to the love of God in this world so that those to whom love is a stranger will find in you generous friends. Bear witness to the love of God in this world so that those to whom love is a stranger will find in you generous friends. About 15 years ago, I had the blessing of going on a mission trip to Montana, to the Blackfeet Nation, which is right outside of Glacier National Park. In fact, the government kind of took their sacred lands, which used to be their sacred lands, and turned it into Glacier National Park. But we got to know the folks on the Blackfeet Reservation and did some work for them. And I met a community member there. He's still a friend of mine after 15 years. His name is Michael Comes at Night. A lot of interesting names on the in Native American communities. Michael Comes at Night. Well, anyway, I was in his home, and I was looking around, and it looked just like, I mean, he has couch and kitchen table and kitchen chairs and everything that we might have, but some of the decorations and paintings were different. And I commented one of the paintings on his wall, and I said, oh, this is beautiful. It's a beautiful painting. And he said, well, thank you very much. And we went about the rest of the visit. But then when it was time to go, he said, Ed, I want to give you something. And he handed me the painting right off his wall. Said, I want you to have this. It's in my office. Now you can look at it if you want. Well, I'd heard that gift giving is really significant, and it just seemed like the right thing to do. But I didn't have a painting to give back, so I ran back into the church where we were staying, and I had with me a hammer that my grandfather, who was then deceased, who'd been my hero, it was one of my most prized possessions. I'd taken it out there to work on the mission trip. And I said, well, that's as good. It's special to me. It looks like it was special to him. So I went back out and gave my hammer. And he said, hold on, I'll be right back. And he went back to his house. You see where we had a couple rounds of figuring out what to do. My luggage wasn't any lighter because everything I gave away, he gives something back. But it was just a really beautiful moment of hospitality taught to me by someone, that radical hospitality, willing to part with something that's very special to him. Taught by someone who practices his own native religion, right? It was this person living on a reservation who I met serving my first church who sort of taught me about hospitality. Jesus' message of hope and good news is for us so that we can be freed from fear. If we find ourselves up against a hard circumstance, maybe an illness, we have Jesus as the great physician. If we find ourselves up against a difficult consequence for a bad decision, we have Jesus, our advocate. If we find ourselves under a stressful situation or a condition in our relationships, we have the Holy Spirit as our counselor. We have God's love as perhaps the way out. God's abiding presence as a comfort in the meantime, expressed through the love of our fellow disciples. That's the good news. But the bad news is that that's not the end. Getting better from our illness is not the end. We get better from our illness so that we can shine God's light into the world and proclaim a message of healing to others. It's not really bad news, I guess. It's just news that the purpose, the ultimate purpose of God's saving, comforting love is not for our possession. It's for taking off our wall and giving away. It's for our sharing that others may come to have life and have it to the full. May God bless us in our sharing. May God transform us through the witness and miracles that happen in others' lives. May we be the miracle that happens in someone else's life, whether they live in Sanford or Syria. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.